It's time to turn to the WUKY Sports page with your host, Keith Elkins, revealing conversations and stories you thought you knew from prominent Kentucky sports figures. Now, here once again is Keith Elkins.
Bill Ransdell is with us today. He's a member of the UK Athletics Hall of Fame and one of the outstanding quarterbacks in UK history. He played from 1983 through 1986. He set Kentucky season records for most offensive plays, total offense, pass attempts, pass completions, passing yardage, completion percentage, and consecutive passes without an interception. He held UK single game records for total plays, pass attempts, completions, completion percentage, and established school records at that time for total offense, total offensive plays, pass attempts, completions, passing yardage, and completion percentage. Helped lead the Wildcats to a 9-3 record and a Hall of Fame bowl victory in 1984. He was drafted by the New York Jets, also had some time with the Indianapolis Colts, and has a very successful career in business in which he is still very active. Bill, we appreciate you taking time to do this today.
Oh, thanks, Keith. I always like talking Kentucky football and anything to do with athletics.
Well, I was going to ask you about this time of the year. We're recording here in mid-July, so the thoughts turn to football, and even though your playing days are some years ago now, I would think that anybody who's played as much football and been involved in the game as much as you have this time of year has to trigger some memories and some anticipation for football.
Yes, it does. It's a fun time. Always looking forward to this time of year. This is the grinding time where, you're not far from whether it was high school or college. You're getting your workouts in, and then you get into team activities, and then you get into two-a-days and whatnot, but it's that time.
It is, and this is really the hardest work time of football, I would think, the preseason. You're out there every day and no game to look forward to for a few weeks. You're battling only against your teammates, trying to learn everything, especially for the quarterback. This is the time of the year when you just have to buckle down and get by it, but at the same time you can anticipate the season starting as well.
Absolutely. It's a time that my high school coach, Duke Owen, we got into the season and started getting into where we were into the playoffs, and I just remember him saying at one point, "Guys, the hay's in the barn. We've done the preparation. We've done the work. Now just go play and have fun."
Yeah.
And so this is the time you have to put in the work, and when you train and with what goes on in today's world, it's changed dramatically since I was there.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I was going to ask you about some of those changes here a little bit later, but I know you're from a football family. In fact, in looking up some information about you, and I see Bill Ransdell's name in the record book at UK many, many times, and then I saw one under the category of longest run from scrimmage, and that was Bill Ransdell, but that was another generation of Bill Ransdell, because that was back in 1960 against Xavier when your dad did that, and so you have had football in your life from day one, really.
I have. And Dad was always great with he always just said, you know what, you got to find your own path, and he said, if you want to do this, great, and he said, if you're going to do it, his big thing was, don't half-ass it, go to work and get it done. He said, but if you don't like it, then figure out what you want to do. But, Dad was it's interesting because he ran track here at UK, too, back in the day. Mm-hmm. He could run that back, 9900 and on the cinders.
Yeah.
And,
wow.
He could fly. Everybody's like, what happened to you? I said, I guess I got my mama's legs in me.
Got the football genes, just not exactly the same kind. Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, it was, an 88-yard run, I think, that he had against Xavier back in 1960. But that's an interesting direction, you might say, that he gave you in that he was going to be insistent that you work at it, whatever you chose, but he wasn't going to necessarily tell you what to choose in terms of your path.
No. And I was a kid. I was probably 11, I want to say, or 12. I grew up in E-Town. Mm-hmm. And so we went, we had gone down for the weekend at Nolan Lake. And I'd had a big boating accident and, came out of it, obviously. But one of those things that after the fact, I had to wear some special gear, and a friend convinced him to have me come out for football, and he said, I don't know if you want to do this, and I said, well, we'll give it a shot. So I went out, and the next thing I know, somebody said, well, can he throw it? And I never really, you know, we just played backyard. We were kids, mm-hmm. you know. So that's kind of how it started.
Yeah. So it must have, your interest must have caught on right away to work at it and become the player that you did. Is that true or not?
Yeah, you know, I don't know that, I don't recall, you know, I liked it. I mean, Sunday afternoons, Saturdays, we were watching football in the fall whenever we could. And I vividly remember thinking and watching and thinking, I want to be like that. And what's it take? And maturity that you have to get to at some point. It doesn't just come as a kid. You have to, and then you figure out what it takes to, you know, with the training and specialty. So,
mm-hmm. And now as you get into the high school years, at some point, you or coaches, those around you, realize that you can do something special with this. It's not going to end at high school for you. When did that begin to develop for you?
I went to a couple of summer camps. Coach Corso, Lee Corso, mm-hmm. he's on the game day. He was coaching at IU, Indiana.
Yeah.
And I'd gone to his camp, and then I end up at a camp in Indiana called Bishop and Dallahan. And they were a specialty camp where they did quarterbacks, receivers, defensive backs, and really focused a lot on the passing game. And I started picking up some drill work, and then really it's just like anything else, it's repetition, mm-hmm. you know, the mother of all teachers, and putting your time in. And so, you know, once that started happening in high school, then I think the first time I went was eighth or ninth grade, and then I was able to, you know, make our varsity team, and then it's, you know, trying to find somebody this summer to throw with. So, yeah. You know, but dad's working and people are doing other things, and it wasn't that easy. So I remember him saying, well, you can get a tire. So he took me and we picked up some old tires and we tied them up on the back of the backstop on the baseball field. Coach wasn't real excited. The baseball coach wasn't.
I guess not.
But, you know, you had a couple balls and, you know, you get two throws, go shag your own balls and, right. you know, those kind of things. So it, you know, just basic stuff that, you know, today it's so specialized. And mm-hmm. there's something, you know, there's a ball retriever. There's, you know, something somewhere at all times. And, you know, it just kind of worked out, actually. You know, I never really thought much more about it. I just know that I kind of took to it and wanted to, and I wasn't a runner, so I had to figure out how to throw it.
Now, I got to come back to the subject of Lee Corso since you brought him. Now, did you have, you were like an eighth or ninth grader, you say, when you went to, did you have any interaction with him during that time?
Sure, he was great.
Oh, good.
He
was actually on the premises.
He was there, yes. And his offensive coordinator, I don't know, I never thought much about it. Actually, too, I'm sitting here, and he took me in and showed me film when I was, you know, a young guy. And it was interesting. I never thought much about it. But if you look back at that in today's world, there's efforts being made to make an impression at some point. And they were in my considerations when I was looking to leave in high school.
Yeah, and a whole generation or two has grown up with Lee Corso being a TV personality. Did you see any of that personality coming out?
Although he was something else. I mean, he was always very demonstrative with what he did, and you know, he was excitable. You know, and he loved the game himself. So, I mean, I don't know if you remember this or you've seen it, but I think they got up. They had not beaten Michigan in years, or Ohio State, one of the two, I can't remember. They got up 7-0, and coach took the whole team to the end zone in front of the scoreboard, got a picture. Indiana 7, Michigan nothing. Of course, they got smoked. They never scored another time that game, but that's the kind of guy he was.
Yeah, you got your media guide cover for next year, right? Or a photo to go in there anyway. Well, that's an interesting chapter as you're in your development. And, of course, you developed into a high school star at Elizabethtown High School. And being the star in high school, and especially as the quarterback, the opposition is going to be directing its attention toward you. The fans are going, when you go on the road, they're going to know who you are, and they're going to know that you're expected to put up some big numbers. Was that a difficult thing at all to deal with? I always wonder about that when I see somebody who's really outstanding on a high school team, whether it's football or basketball.
You know, in my case, I really don't think it was, Keith. my senior year was kind of my coming out year. My junior year, I got hurt and broke my foot. And it was a result of some other stuff that had happened years before and in a scrimmage. And so I was out most of that year. And that team we had, my, you know, the seniors on my junior year were, I mean, we had more players then than we did my senior year. You know, when I came up to UK's camp, and that was Coach Kersey still, and he, the guy that was getting all the accolades was Mike Whitaker. He was the guy, and he had been, he was throwing the ball around, you know, at Leslie County, and he ends up being Tim's coach, and so he's the one that was, you know, on everybody's radar. And then, so it, I really didn't, I didn't feel it, if nothing else. I never sensed that. When we got into the playoffs, I really didn't understand. So one of my roommates was from Fort Thomas Highlands in the at UK, and Jeff told me that when they we played them in the finals and they beat us, and he said, you know, we changed everybody's position for your game, the state finals. I said, really? He said, what? I said, what do you mean you changed them? He said, coach came in and looked and saw how small you were, and he moved everybody around and wanted at least 20 pounds per man and said, he said, sick him and come go get me. So it's the only thing I can relate to anybody doing, and I didn't know anything about it. I would have never known if, you know, had been my roommate and Jeff hadn't come here and played linebacker.
right. Well, you were the highlight of their game plan anyway.
Well, I guess so.
Now, you mentioned choices of college and how the camps made you at least take a look at Indiana. You had the UK Heritage, of course. Any other serious looks during that time?
Ironically enough, Wisconsin was in very, very early. And there was doctors and people calling the house and talking to my parents. And, you know, so that was one. Coach Kidd, you know, he called from Eastern and said, Bill, I don't know that you'll come, but you want to come? I'm, you know, I got a place for you. I mean, Western, Coach Fikes was there then. I had a lot of letters. I don't remember a whole lot. I just remember some of those early on. And then when the change was made from Coach Kersey to Coach Claiborne, Jerry Eisman, the offensive coordinator, coach ended up coming down, and that's when they got really in the game. Coach Kersey, they were kind of like, you know, Coach Eastern. You know, he you want to come. Mike was their guy, clearly, and I don't know who else they had at that point on their radar, but as it worked out, I ended up, you know, going to UK, and here we are.
Yeah, and Jerry Eisman, you mentioned that name, and he and Jerry Claiborne were, I mean, running mates, you might say, for a long time.
Yes.
During Jerry Claiborne's head coaching career, Jerry Eisman was right there.
Yes, and Coach, as I recall, he applied for the head job once Coach Claiborne retired. Mm-hmm. But, yes, he was a good one.
So you make your decision. What actually led you to say, this is where I want to go?
That was a conversation I did have with my dad. And he just said, again, I'm, you know, kind of reference back, I'm not here to influence what you do, where you go. He said, but most of the time when you go to college, most people – you're going to have, you know, you have some success. You're going to have a lot of, you know, you're going to end up settling. Usually a lot of people do in that area, depending on what, unless you're corporate. And, you know, there's obviously exceptions. But he said, you know, where is it that you want to end up? And what is it, you know, that you want to be, where you want to be? And, you know, Knoxville's down the road. And, you know, I don't think I could have gotten into Vandy back then, you know, grade-wise. Yeah. But it's... You know, so I really started, I thought a little bit about that, and I'd been to Lexington. Dad would take me and my brothers up to ball games, and he was a social worker, and so my stepmother, she was a school teacher, so, you know, we're out there at kickoff trying to get, you know, people to hand us tickets to get in, or if we got in there early, Tom was still there, Kalinowski, and equipment manager, and we're shagging balls in the end zone, and you know, every now and then they throw us a, you know, big balloon ball we could take home. So we grew up going up and going to games and had that, you know, kind of instilled in us anyway. I remember going to Stolfield as a kid.
Yeah.
So it, I messed that up. I came back, apparently Dad's, you know, I wanted to get a pennant and I came back with an orange one. So yeah, that was an interesting time. I don't remember much after that. I think I had to go swap the pennant, though. I remember walking back down and going, I need to swap this.
Yeah, it didn't last long.
No.
I guess. You mentioned his thoughts on where you might settle after football. That's, I think, an interesting aspect to coming from a football family, in that not only to get insights on how to play the game and how to conduct yourself during the time you're playing, you might get some extra insight on taking a look at life after football.
That's
because the people who have played know that eventually it comes to an end.
And that was always what he said. He said, son, you get an opportunity to go play and somebody's going to pay for your education. And he said, one, get your degree. And he said, there is life after football, and that's what you're going to have because the playing will end. And that's just the way it's going to be. And you've got to remember that. And it was drilled in my head. And I graduated in 4 years.
And playing for Jerry Claiborne, who was just an interesting man, and an impression from the outside that any fan or observer would have. But he was extremely competitive. He was always thought of as just a man of impeccable integrity, a man of his word. And at least that's the impression that he gave off. You worked with him over the course of your entire career at UK. What are your thoughts when I ask about Jerry Claiborne?
You nailed it on the, you know, everything right on the head. It, Keith, he was, you know, at that time, a bunch of my teammates, I can remember us always sitting there and, you know, carrying on, and he'd say, yeah, we walk. I can remember us coming in after practice and, you know, walking past, and somebody walking past some tape on the floor, or somebody, you know, taking the tape off their arm or something that on their wrist that they'd had, and he'd look over and go, "Well, Tommy, what are you doing, throwing your tape on the floor? There's a trash can right there."
Yeah.
You know, we can't talk about it without mimicking his voice.
Oh, absolutely.
And he, and so then if you walk past it, he'd go, "Well, Billy, what are you doing, leaving it lay on the floor?"
Yeah.
Pick it up, put it away, and take care of your house. Mm-hmm. And freshmen all had study hall. We had breakfast check, which was fantastic because you couldn't mess around. You had to go to breakfast and at least get up, go sign in, and then all of our classes, he had us basically be done before 2 o'clock, and that's when our individual meetings started. So you had to get in, get up, and get it done.
When he took over here, of course, his first year, they didn't win a game. They were 0-10-1. So
that was my 82 year.
Yeah, he was dealing with that challenge, and everybody was. I mean, nobody wants to stay there, but you need to improve quickly, and he did. But that must have been very, very tough for him to deal with, and all of you as well.
It was brutal. I just remember coming in, and there were five of us in the quarterback recruiting class. So it was Mike Whitaker, myself, Tony Mays, if you remember from Paintsville, Brian Williams from Middlesboro, and then there was Gary Sexton, and he was in from Ohio. I don't remember the school, but, you know, Gary ended up going to play in those three. Tony played running back. He returned punt, kickoffs. Brian did as well, and they ended up being defensive. Mike and I were the only two QBs out of that class at state. So I just remember I felt like I'd, you know, made the traveling squad. I just wanted to make it because we had Jenkins here, Doug Martin, and there was a couple other guys I don't recall right now, but I remember having a conversation with Coach Eisman, and he said, we just want to set you back and redshirt you and give you a year. And I was like, dang, I wanted to make the traveling squad.
Oh, sure.
The rules weren't what they are today,
yeah,
which I think is fantastic. You can play 3, 4, 5 games and still get redshirt, which it should have been like that for years.
Yeah. In those days, it was one play.
Oh, one play and you're done.
Yeah.
You're out. You know, you lose the whole season. Didn't make any sense. But so anyway, that's kind of how we ended. That season went, and I remember sitting in the stands thinking, gee, watching, you know, Herschel Walker take a pitch and go the far sideline and outrun our cutoff from our defensive backs. I mean, just phenomenal, you know, the guys we played against.
Yeah, and just didn't quite have enough to compete that year anyway. But things turned around pretty quickly, and then 83, you had a winning season, 6-5-1, and you're working your way in, and had a postseason game then. So yes. Things really made a major jump up at that point.
Yeah, they did. It was good. It was a good year. I was able to battle and get to being a backup to Jenkins that year, and ended up getting, you know, quite a bit of playing time.
Yeah, and then the next year, this is, I don't know if that 84 team gets as all the credit it deserves, but that was really an outstanding team. And you look down the roster of that team, and there were some great players on that team.
Yeah, we were very fortunate. We had, you know, Coach Klaber, much like Coach Stoops, he's a defensive guy. He built it around the defense, and let's play good defense, and let's run the football and control the clock. And you look at our running backs we had, all went in the, you know, drafted by in the NFL.
Yeah, George Adams and Mark Logan and Mark Higgs. I mean, you
Bobby had Joe Hunter. I mean, you can go on.
That's right. Yeah. So when you turn around, you could hand the ball off to somebody pretty reliable, couldn't you?
You always could.
But you were beginning to make your mark then as well, and you were. We talked about your dad being a fast runner. And you being the quarterback, but you could get out there and be mobile and throw the ball on the run. I was looking at some highlights, and that seemed to be something that you were especially good at, is to be able to hit receivers on when you were on the run, and not necessarily a desperation run, but just you know, being able to throw on the move, and that was seemed like a big part of what you did.
Yeah, we had some different plays we built in. Having grown up and worked on drills and sprint out passes, you know, it's effective. You know, get you away from the line of scrimmage, especially when you got guys laying their ears back, you know, on defense, and you got to be able to change it up a little bit and make them, you know, move the chess piece, right? Make them make a change as well defensively. So, it was something that. I could get by with it. I wasn't going to outrun people very long.
I think he did more than get by, but yes, he did. He was run oriented and had some great runners on that team too. But that was just a really, really good team. 9-3, started 5-0, and then of course capped off the season with the Hall of Fame Bowl win over Wisconsin. A pretty much of a nail biter there, as I guess they had an opportunity to win late and bobbled a snap on a field goal try. But you had to come from behind. You had to come from way behind in that game.
We did, and it was just a great effort. I think the final was 20-19,
right.
And they were big. I mean, they're Big Ten. They were big. They were big defensive guys. I remember too. I'm on the sideline, and then we were in a position that we were trying to. We needed to get in the end zone. I think it was third quarter, and they're talking and everything. And I said, "Coach," and Coach Claiborne's like, "Hey, everybody, quiet, Billy. What do you got?" And I said, "They're coming hard, guys." I said, "Let's screen them," you know. And so they. I got Coach Osmond up there, and he heard it, and he's like, "All right, here's we go." And that's the screen that I threw to Logan, if you've looked at it. And he takes it in 20 yards. It gets hit right at the goal line, but they just laid their ears back, and you got to slow, you know, it's playing that game.
Yeah.
And you got to slow them down, and that did it. And then we're still battling to come back. They had three first rounders and first 10 picks off that team.
Yeah.
And I ended up in New York with Al Toon, who was their receiver.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's one thing about football and noticing those things, and that, you know, the screen gives you a step advantage, or you know, you don't need big advantage. It was if you can get the first step. I mean, especially if you're throwing to Mark Logan, you get one step advantage, it's huge, isn't it? All those little things add up.
It is, and you know, it's one of those things they kept coming and coming, because when we were having to throw the football, they had their tackles and defensive ends really wide, so getting on the edge and, you know, the sprint out wasn't working really good, and they were just screaming, trying to keep me in the pocket to make sure. And it was one of those things that if you can get, you got to have something to slow them down and make them think elsewise of what you're just going to do. And they wanted everything they were just trying to funnel all of our running game and everything inside.
Mm-hmm. And taking charge like that and saying, well, we need to do this or we need to try this is part of the quarterback's job as the leader. The quarterback is definitely the leader of the team or certainly the offensive unit. And you have to be able to not only make those things but have to have people have confidence in you saying those things and leading those things. Is that something that you have to have in you as you develop as a football player, or can you learn more things about that as you can anything else?
I think it is something that you can learn. I think you need to be able to you better know what you're talking about. It's like anything. What's the logic behind what I was saying? Well, they saw how we weren't slowing, you know, they were just pinning their ears back, and so the screen makes sense. We didn't have the flanker screens like you see a lot today, and that's just to run people east and west, you know. And we really didn't have a lot of that game in our passing game at all. So this was our option to do something like that. And you know, we, as I recall, we did it to the short side of the field, which works because usually the short side of the field, that defensive end's coming hard no matter what. And today, you know, especially back then, and so you got a running start, and when you got, like you said, Mark Logan to be able to do that, you got a chance. And like you said, coach, you know, they were good. They would listen. And, you know, then they sit and they look at it and think about it, and they're like, yeah, okay, you know.
And you talked about having you got to know what you're talking about, and that all goes back to that's off-season and preseason stuff where you know the things that you're supposed to do so well that it makes it easier to improvise or to change from that when you do need to change from that. And that's all easier said than done. The quarterback has to do all these things many times very quickly. Tell me about the routine. You break the huddle, you're coming up to the line of scrimmage, and you've got to look everything over. You know what play has been called, and sometimes you might say, well, I don't think this is going to work. But
that's it.
But you got to do that in just seconds. Tell me about this comes over a period of years, I'm sure, but tell me about the development and learning to do that and being able to make those split-second decisions, and also just what it's like. You break the huddle, and what do you do then?
Typically, as a quarterback, you know, you're going to find the safety because the defensive safety is going to pretty much end up leading you, at least starting you on what their coverage is going to be. And when you can figure out where that safety is going to be, that's a piece that you're, as soon as you break, I'm looking. As soon as I break the huddle, then I'm looking at the D lineman, because the defensive lineman, you know, you've got either two tackles, two ends, or however you want to. The terminology changes some, but where they line up, where's the ball? Is it in the middle of the field? Is it on the right hash, where the right side's the short side of the field? Left side's the open side, and then, you know, a lot of the defenses would sit there, and let's just say we're on the left hash, and that's the short side of the field. They'll overshift their D line, so they'll shift them to the wide side of the field because that's bigger space to run to. Well, then they'll take the defensive secondary, and they'll take the cornerback and put him up on the line of scrimmage in the short side, and rotate their defense, or they'll do it on the snap. So when you see that safety, and that safety goes from being in the middle field to over the left hash, you know that they're rolling. And based on film, field position, down and distance, all teams have tendencies. Mm-hmm. All defensive and offensive coordinators have tendencies. That's why you self-scout about midway through the season, and you can sit there, and so when you got a good sense of where that safety is and what that D line is, that D line would tell you sometimes what the end result would be for the coverage, which is why if you look at it, it's a lot of these defensive lines, you see them shifting at the last second. That's why they shift.
Yeah.
Because the secondary is trying to move on the snap of the ball too, and that's why they do it.
Mm-hmm. And again, you're making the decision in a split second, but at the same time, hours and months of
prior
work have
it.
Gone into
that's right.
to doing that.
That's
yeah.
right. And then, you know, and ultimately, the goal is like this. You know, it's something you've done so many times, it becomes natural, and you don't have to overthink it.
Right.
Because when you're thinking, then it slows you down.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was going to ask you what's changed about the quarterback position, and you see college quarterbacks now. Some of those fundamental things are going to be the same in that you still have to be the leader of the offensive team. You still got to be able to pick up on what the defense is doing. And so what has changed in your mind over the last few decades of quarterback play?
Yeah, I think the biggest change from back in 40 years, sadly, crazy enough, is you see more running quarterbacks, and you see that focus more. And it, if you got a quarterback that can has some good legs on him, and we did back in our days. I mean, it just wasn't as big of a focal point because that's your, whoever's your number one guy. You don't want to run him and get him blown up and out of the game. But I think that's become such a bigger part of the game and game planning. And if nothing else, you have, especially in college and high school, if you got a guy that can run, you have to game plan defensively for it. And so even if you don't want to run a lot, you have to put that in film. You have to run some plays so that the defense has to practice it and take up that time. Right. So it's all a chess match.
Yeah, it's kind of an indirect step, but it is a step, yeah, toward gaining an advantage. One thing that has changed about the quarterback in college is that he makes a lot more money than he used to. And so I do have to – I'm not going to ask you about the long streaks against Florida and Tennessee anymore because we broke those UK has broken those, and so you don't have to answer those questions anymore. But I do want to ask players from your era, and I'm sure you get asked about this a lot, but the NIL now is things have exploded, and players and quarterbacks especially are going to be making a lot of money in college if they're regulars and starters. And what are your thoughts?
I have always been a believer that guys should get paid something somehow. Mm-hmm. Now, coming from where we got $20 a week to where they are now, yeah, I don't know that it makes any sense. There's got to be, you know, if you're going to have and pay guys, what are the incentives? I mean, to me, it's like being in the NFL and having a contract. Mm-hmm. And if they're not held to, specifics in the contract, you know, then it doesn't make a lot of sense to me to just pay people and get no result. There's got to be some accountability built in, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
mm-hmm,
in my mind.
Yeah.
I think it gives players a safety net of sorts now. So if they blow up and they can't go to the next level, they've got some money, if they've got some sense, that's got given them something to get started life with. Mm. What's that number? I don't know, Keith.
That's
because I've heard some crazy numbers, and I just scratch my head and think, whoa. I mean, but I did that too when Coach Mummy came here and started slinging the ball around. No, I was like, that'd have been fun too.
That would have been fun. Yeah. Yeah, it's the kind of thing where some structure is obviously needed.
Yeah.
Players getting compensation when you're talking about getting $20 a week, and you look out there and you see a full stadium, and you know they're watching on TV, and there's advertising all over the place, and you think somebody's making a lot of money here. There's a lot of money.
And we never thought about it like that. You know, we just went. It was for the love of the game.
Right.
And it's interesting to see.
You have had a lot of success in business, and you've been involved in different things and very competitive fields in the restaurant business and the bar business. I'll ask you about your connection from football to that. How did that evolve, and was that a part of things for you, or was this just, okay, this is my life after football and this is what I want to pursue?
I don't know. You know, I just got out of being in long-term care for 27 years, which is something that a lot of people haven't heard about. And I got in it. We worked really with, we have what we call personal care homes. And so it's all been morphed through the years with assisted living, but ours really were with disadvantaged, the mentally handicapped, bipolar, schizophrenia, that kind of thing, veterans. And I think that came from my dad, a social worker.
Yeah.
I think that's that side of me. And the reimbursement is nothing. It's, you know, the Medicaid state rate. But we did that for years. That was a heartfelt thing. It was a business, but very challenging. As far as the restaurants and bars, I think it's like with the people I had with the you know, at one time we had, I was counting over 100 people that, you know, at Christmas I'm going through putting together envelopes for, and it got to be a lot, and I'm thinking, but it's a team, mm-hmm, no matter what it is, whatever the business is, it's, there's coaching involved.
Right.
You know, if it's yours and this is your vision, then you have to be able to take that and be able to convey that this is the play. Mm-hmm. Now I need you to execute, and you have to lead. And I think it just all kind of fits together.
Yeah.
I don't think, you know, whatever it is. I think the leadership piece and calling the plays in the huddle is part of that. But because I've had people say, well, how'd you just end up, you know, being kind of working for yourself, entrepreneurial? I said, I never really went looking for it. It just, I guess, something that was there. Mm-hmm. Been in real estate for almost 40 years before my life. Same kind of thing. So,
yeah, you talked about the personal care facilities, and that is something I would think a lot of UK football fans who know who you are and know about some of the other things you've done may not have known so much. That was not something that's a real high profile part of your biography or anything, is it?
No, it's never been, and it's just not something. I mean, when I got in the restaurant and bar business, I didn't tell anybody about it for probably 4 or 5 years until people figured it out. And I've had people ask me, I guess I'm just not really a good networker. I've never really gone looking for something from anybody. And I kind of enjoy just moving along. And I have my day in the sun. Mm-hmm. And I don't need anything else.
Yeah. And obviously you still enjoy the day-to-day challenge of business, though, right?
I do. Yeah, I do. I like putting together the teams, I think. I like being able to sit and coach. And I coached high school football 18 years, which is not, you know, known by a lot of folks. But most of those were at Henry Clay, where all of our kids went to school.
Mm-hmm. How are you involved in football now?
I am not currently involved. Mm-hmm. We have the K House, which is the Letterman's and letter associations. So anybody that's lettered in any kind of sport, male or female, through UK, that's the house. And I've been on the board there for years, past president, done that. And then I coached. I hadn't coached in several years now, but the last I did Henry Clay for 14, 15 years. Coached at the Horsemen. Mm-hmm. For 2 or 3 years, I can't remember now, but that was fun. Yeah. I miss it. I've had some people reach out, and I'm working toward trying to get back there. Mm-hmm. We just started a new business, new bar last year, and so trying to put that team together. And when I'm confident that we're there, then I'd like to get back on the sideline. I love watching film and breaking it down and going through all of the this time of year. Mm-hmm. You know, throwing the ball around and.
Yeah.
Watching footwork and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about how you would describe yourself as a coach, but it sounds like you really like the details, the preparation, developing a game plan. Is that right?
I do. Yeah. I just got chills thinking about it. It's fun. There's 100 yards. There's not much else to it. It's disguise, and if you can get the basic fundamentals done and. You know, put the work, somebody's willing to put the work in, you can have success. Yeah. I mean, and you may not be the most talented and have the most athletic ability, but if you put in more work than that person, you're going to succeed.
Yeah. And while every sport has to have some sort of game plan and preparation goes on, football seems to be unique in the sense that you've got 11 against 11 and you got to line up and you got to come up with different ideas, different approach to it, depending on what your advantages of the other team are. It seems like a different level of strategy that would probably bring even more satisfaction to the person who develops the game plan when it's successful.
You know, it does. And, you know, there's pieces of it that, you know, people can look and they go, wow. And when you really break it down, it's like anything else. It's very basic. Mm-hmm. If you keep it simple. And it's really kind of fun when you always like breaking it down and looking and putting the game plan together. All right, here's the play. Quarterback goes up and he executes it. And, you know, you're expecting this defense. Here it is. Mm-hmm. All right, now can you just take the ball and, you know, either run the ball where we're supposed to or throw the ball on him, catch it. And when that happens, it's very, very satisfying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so you know that everything that you worked on came to fruition And then there's a sense that you beat that other defensive guy on the other side, too. Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah. Always an element of competition.
Competition in there,
too.
Yeah.
You mentioned opening a new bar. Tell me about that.
We opened a new place down in the University Plaza last fall. It's got a rooftop bar. It's called Two-Fisted Willie's. We have live music Friday and Saturday nights, kind of country-centric. And we've got to put a patio on the roof. So it's keeping us running.
Yeah, and there's a lot of tradition in that location, isn't there, as far as people having fun and near campus?
Yeah, there's a little bit that's going on there.
So a little bit of history.
We were watching that run this year by the Cats and Coach Pope's first year and thought, oh, that'd be really good. But he get his feet under him. We're ready for him.
Yeah, ready for celebrations
yes.
down there. Speaking of that, looking ahead now as we're just a few weeks away from UK's 2025 season, and this is an important season for Kentucky and Mark Stoops, and a very difficult one ahead. The Southeastern Conference is just as tough as ever, if not tougher than ever, because of the expansion. What are your thoughts as we head into this season?
Well, let me state what I think is the obvious that everybody says is that we'll be lucky to win 2, 3, 4 games, maybe 5. And you look at it and you wonder and you say, okay, you got to beat, you know, your MAC schools. Mm-hmm. And then you got to beat Louisville. So that's your 4. And then where do you get 2 or 3 more in the SEC? Louisville's no guarantee with Brohm. And he's a great coach. So I like the fact that, and again, I guess they're really looked at as big underdogs right now. And I've watched it and felt it, and I'm really getting a sense that there's a chip forming, if it hasn't already. And I think that's a great thing for the team and a way to play because South Carolina, better. You always count it, right? Vanderbilt, better.
Mm-hmm.
Missouri, better. Florida, coming back and better. And like you said, you got Texas now in there with OU. So Tennessee, back, better.
Mm-hmm.
So where do you get your wins? And I think that you go back and, you know, for them to sit. And again, this is going to, you know, injuries do play in this. But who's going to pull the trigger at quarterback? And what are we going to look like? You know, what are we going to – is our locker room back together? You know, because I felt like at times that there were some – you know, some of the guys, I don't know if it's NIL money and, you know, I'll just leave. You know, you've seen
sure.
it. It's, what is it? And I've gotten the sense, though, that they're coming around, whether it's around Coach Stoops and, you know, this the negativity that he's been taking, you know, with the buyout and the year we had last year, what have you, whatever it may be, it doesn't matter. All that has to believe is that group right over there at the stadium and keep all the other noise out. I'd like to see him just get out there and, you know, put the pedal down and never let up.
Well, football is approaching, and as we started our conversation, it's always an exciting time of the year. And, Bill, we appreciate you sharing the memories with us as well as the outlook on football's future as well at UK. So thanks again for your time today.
Thank you, Keith. I appreciate you having me.
You've been listening to the WUKY Sports Page with your host, Keith Elkins, an exclusive podcast from 91.3 WUKY, produced at the WUKY studios by Alan Lytle. Our theme music is Peanut Butter and Jam by Illogical Bit, available at soundcloud.com/illogicalbit. Subscribe to the Sports Page through iTunes, Google Play, or at our website, wuky.org.